Good morning and welcome to Focus. This is our Morning Talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. Counterfeit prescription medicines have become an international problem. And just to give you one number, just to demonstrate that in a small way, going back to the 90s, at that time, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration investigated an average of 5 counterfeit drug cases a year. But since 2000, there have been more than 20 investigations per year. It's possible that taking a counterfeit may just be a waste of a person's money, but there are real health risks attached. In this part of the show, we'll be talking with investigative journalist Catherine Eben. She's been writing about this subject for a number of years now and is the author of a book which is titled Dangerous Doses: How Counterfeiters Are Contaminating America's Drug Supply. It is published published now in a paperback. It was a book that we talked about when it was brand new a number of years ago, and it's something that she has continued to follow and write about. She is an award-winning investigative reporter. Her work has appeared in a number of places: Fortune, Self, Vanity Fair, also New York Times, the New York Observer. She's reported for ABC News. Her work's been featured on national news programs, including 60 Minutes, 2020, Nightline, and also National Public Radio. She's joining us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. And if you'd like to send an email, send your question that way, you certainly can do that. And that is will-talk@WILL. How do we do that? WILL.illinois.edu. I think that that's right. I think I need to write that down. Anyway, the caller is here. The guest is here. Ms. Eben, hello.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks very much for talking with us again. You know, it was I guess it was a number of months ago I heard you on the People's Pharmacy, and it reminded me of the subject, and I thought, well, that's well worth revisiting. So I'm really pleased that you could give us some more of your time.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
For people to get an idea of what we're talking about, I think probably when you say counterfeit, then what people will think of as something that is an outright fake, in the sense that they would have a bottle and it would say that it was Lipitor, but whatever was inside was not. And that does happen. But the thing that you have written about is slightly different, but equally problematic. Maybe you can talk a little bit about this, just to give people an example, about the thing that you wrote about, the big heist from Lilly that you wrote about for, I believe this was in Fortune and just appeared a few months ago.
Right. Well, let me just step back for a minute to say that there, the sort of big umbrella is the issue of diverted drugs.
Okay.
And diverted drugs mean that they are supposed to follow a certain path in the supply chain to go from the manufacturer to a big wholesaler, one stop to a pharmacy near you. Diverted means that at some point in their journey through the supply chain, they may leave this sort of narrow pathway, wind up at a secondary wholesaler, wind up stolen from a warehouse, wind up even in the hands of a counterfeiter, and then they will re-enter the drug supply because whoever has gotten them illegally wants to resell them for a profit. The reason that this is so dangerous is because once they've left the legitimate supply chain, we don't know where they came from. And if we can't vouch for their origin, we cannot vouch for their ingredients. So the big umbrella idea is diverted. If your drug has been diverted and there's no clear origin, then it's technically adulterated. It's not safe for human consumption. But in the course of being diverted, very often drugs may fall into the hands of unscrupulous counterfeiters who may do something like, for example, up-label the drug. So in my book, Dangerous Doses, I tracked the story of the counterfeiting of Epogen, which is a very fragile, very expensive biotechnology drug that comes in a vial. It has to be temperature controlled. It can't be shaken. A low-dose vial sells for $25. A high-dose vial sells for something like $450. So a counterfeiter got a hold of hundreds of thousands of vials of the low dose and up-labeled them to a high dose. So the profit that he was making on the difference was about $46 million. And what happened was that not only were patients taking what they thought was a high-dose drug that they needed for post-transplant anemia, for cancer, but they were also, so they were getting a suboptimal amount, but they were also getting a drug that was mishandled. And that's very dangerous as well, because these drugs, once they're not temperature controlled, the underlying proteins can break down, and you can get very, very ill from taking them.
Yeah. So the important thing is that people are they're buying this medication, and they're expecting that what it says that it is what it is, that it is that drug, that it is that dosage, and
right.
Also assuming that this has been properly taken care of and properly handled, and everything has been done so that it will have the expected effect. And
right.
the danger is that if that all doesn't happen, that, as I said, not only are people wasting their money because it's not going to be effective, but it actually is possible that there are negative consequences to that person's health that would result.
Absolutely. You know, and I should just say that when I started out reporting this, I probably started on this project in about 2002, ultimately. And, you know, when I thought of counterfeit drugs, I assumed, well, you can buy them on the Internet, or, you know, maybe they're in Tijuana, Mexico. But it never occurred to me that you could walk into a CVS pharmacy or a Duane Reade in this country and get counterfeit drugs. But, in fact, that's exactly what my reporting uncovered. So it's a major problem.
And I think that, again, goes to the idea, I would expect, that probably most people would think that the prescription medication that they take, it comes from the factory that makes it, and they put it onto a truck, and then they drive it over to Walgreens. And that's
right.
that's not what happens.
That is not at all what happens. And the thing is that in this big, sprawling octopus that is called the supply chain, there are many, many hundreds of middlemen companies, and these are wholesalers, some of whom are perfectly legal and some of whom are not, some of whom are honest and some of whom are not. And so, for example, some of your guests may have heard about these very serious drug shortages that we've been facing. And Elijah Cummings' office in Maryland has just done an investigation into price gouging that is going on with these drug shortages, so that there are these wholesalers who are saying, nobody can get their hands on this drug, well, we have the drug, and we're going to charge you 600 times as much to buy it. And hospital pharmacists who are desperate to get their hands on these drugs are having to pay it. And so, I mean, it's hazardous, it's tragic in many ways.
Our guest in this hour, I'd just like to introduce again, is investigative journalist Catherine Eben, and we are talking about the problem of counterfeit prescription drugs, something that she has explained here. She's been writing about as an investigative journalist for a number of years. If you're interested in looking at a book that she's written that deals with the subject, the book is Dangerous Doses, How Counterfeiters Are Contaminating America's Drug Supply. So I'm sure you can find that at the bookstore or wherever it is you buy books. Questions here are also welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Well, again, to illustrate just how much money there is here, or how big a thing that it can be even on a single in a single instance, talk a little bit about this again, this the story that you wrote for Fortune. This appeared in March, that it was about theft, and this occurred last year. Thieves broke into a warehouse in Connecticut that belonged to the big drug manufacturer Eli Lilly, and they stole a lot of stuff.
Right. That was actually the largest pharmaceutical theft in history. $76 million from an Eli Lilly warehouse in Connecticut. And there were certain Pink Panther aspects to it. The thieves went through the roof. But in fact, you know, when I did my reporting, the warehouse was woefully inadequately guarded. There was no perimeter fence. There was no $10 an hour security guard. The thieves went through the roof on a very stormy Sunday morning before dawn. It was an Easter Sunday. But incredibly, there were security cameras. There were security cameras in back, but they were and they were videotaping the thieves at work. But there was nobody live monitoring the video cameras. So the result was that these guys were able to spend practically 24 hours inside this warehouse, use the even the trucks inside to load up medicine into their own trucks. And they were so relaxed inside the warehouse that they even ordered in pizza, which is just incredible. And they drove away with $76 million worth of drugs. Now, you know, your listeners might be saying, well, how does this affect me? But it affects all of us because those drugs that are stolen in these organized heists are re-entering the supply chain and winding up in our pharmacies.
Yeah, that's the important thing, is that, and that rather than being sold out of the trunk of a car, they end up back in the system, and that's the issue. So that people go in good faith, they go to wherever it is that they have their prescriptions filled, expecting that it, as I said, that it will be what it says that it is, and they would have no way of knowing. And it's arguably, I suppose, the retailer that they're dealing with would not know either.
Well, I mean, this is a question, and my article, Drug Theft Goes Big, raises that very question, because one of the things that happened, there was a heist of insulin in Tennessee, and within 4 days, that long-acting insulin, which is called Levemir, made by a company, Novo Nordisk, wound up at wholesalers in North Carolina. Now, the manufacturer sent around a notice to all of its customers saying, if anybody is offering you, if any wholesalers are offering you Levemir with these lot numbers, let's call it lot number 123, do not buy it because for certain it's been stolen, because the thieves had stolen the entire lot of those drugs. For certain it's been stolen, and, you know, let us know right away. Well, lo and behold, several weeks after they sent out that FedEx letter, Kroger's Pharmacy ended up buying a ton of that Levemir with that lot number from an unscrupulous wholesaler in Maryland. Why did they do that? Well, they got it cheaper. You know, it's the problem is that these wholesalers, in many cases, are offering attractive prices to pharmacy chains with this diverted drug, and people have been far too cavalier about the health consequences of it.
Yeah,
but it's very dangerous.
And I'm certain that now, with the ever increasing cost of prescription medications, that this makes it much more attractive. It makes it attractive as a target for theft, first of all, and then along the supply chain, I suppose it makes it attractive because, as you can say, if somebody is used to buying something at a certain price and can get it for half and sell it for what they were selling before, that's a serious increase in their profit.
Right. And, you know, I would just say that when I go to the pharmacy to pick up my medicine, I look at it in a totally different light than I used to. Any assumption that I had that my drugs are pristine are gone.
Well, I suppose that gets right to the question of what a consumer can do to try to protect himself or herself. Is there anything that consumers can do?
Well, you know, one very important thing that consumers can do is to be vigilant. And while that sounds sort of like lame advice, it's really true. And in fact, many of the counterfeits, and there was widespread Lipitor counterfeiting in 2003, have been really discovered and reported initially by vigilant consumers. So you need to know what your medicine looks like. And when you go to the pharmacy and you get a refill of medicine, you need to ask yourself, does it look the same? Does it taste the same? Am I feeling okay? Do I feel different than I used to? And those are all things that, if the answer is no, you need to bring it to the attention of your pharmacy. You know, now, another issue is that a lot of people, if you take a maintenance medication, you might get switched to a generic without even being told. So it's very important that you know, if you take medicine, you need to really focus on what it's supposed to look like, who manufactures it, and those are all questions that you can ask a pharmacist. But it's very important that people pay attention to that question. The other thing that I recommend people do is you can set up a Google alert on your computer. So you can set up an alert that says, put in the name of the medication you take and FDA. So that if there's a recall or there's an alert about your medicine from the FDA, you will find out. That's another way to do it.
And I guess it's good probably to underscore the point that then this is particularly something that it would apply to people who have been taking medication for a long time, that if you've been going and taking this thing for a long time and it seems to be working fine and you don't have any problems, that if suddenly something doesn't seem to be right, then that's the time that you should either talk to the pharmacist or talk to your doctor, talk to somebody and say, look, I'm having this issue. Do you think that's the potential that there's a problem? And that's, people should consider pharmacists to be that kind of information resource.
You know, also, you bring up a really good point, and there's another issue here, which is a lot of times if somebody's taking a medicine that suddenly stops working, the inclination of the doctor is to either switch them to a different medication or to increase the dose. And often that step is taken without ever considering, hey, maybe there's something wrong with this drug. Now, there was a really interesting case of this Levemir where Kroger ended up buying the Levemir, was dispensing it to patients. There was a patient at the MD Anderson Cancer Center who also had diabetes. The doctors were trying to control his diabetes. They switched him to Levemir, and suddenly his diabetes was totally uncontrolled. Now, this was an amazing piece of clinical vigilance because MD Anderson had not dispensed this medicine to him. He had gotten this from a local pharmacy, but his response, given that he was switched to Levemir, was so uncharacteristic that the doctors at MD Anderson actually contacted the manufacturer, and that is how the manufacturer first discovered that the Levemir was back on the market. Hmm.
Are there particular medications that are more susceptible to this than others, or could it be anything?
It definitely could be anything. There are certainly medications that are more fragile and are more vulnerable to the negative effects of diversion. So, for example, if you're taking a medication that requires temperature control, that requires delicate handling, and those are typically injectable drugs, you know, that you really, those are the most sensitive to this. And sometimes they're even more costly, so that also makes it a ripe target for counterfeiters.
I think that I remember, and I don't know if I remember this detail correctly, going back to the story about the robbery, the theft of $75 million worth of prescription drugs from this warehouse in Connecticut that belonged to Eli Lilly, that those, none of that so far has resurfaced?
That's correct. My understanding is that investigators suspect they know where it is, but publicly it has not resurfaced.
No, so it's sitting in a warehouse or somewhere.
That's right. Mm. And a lot of times, you know, the investigation gets so hot and there's so much attention on it, which is as it should be, that the dirty wholesaler who ended up buying it cannot actually sell it back into the supply chain.
We talked here about the problem being, and in spite of, again, of people thinking, well, a medication gets made, it gets made at the plant, it gets loaded on a truck, and they drive it over maybe to one other place, but essentially it goes from the manufacturer to the endpoint where it's sold. And what you have explained is that, no, that's not true. It may pass through a number of hands in the supply chain from manufacturer to point of sale, and that's where we end up with trouble if we have people who are unscrupulous middlemen who are handling the medications. If you were going to be that kind of a wholesaler, say you're going to be in that business of buying medications from manufacturers and then being the person that does the distribution then to the retailers, is there any sort of licensing required, inspection required? What sort of oversight is there for these people who are in the middle of the supply chain?
Well, that's a great question, and I actually go into this in my book, Dangerous Doses. So, for example, in Florida, when I started reporting this, in order to become a pharmaceutical wholesaler, you had to fill out like a 3-page form. You had to be able to pay $75 as a surety bond. You had to demonstrate that you had a lock on your door and a refrigerator on the premises and air conditioning. You had needed no educational requirements. And so this was to handle, you know, life-saving medicine and to resell it. But there was one question on the form which said, have you ever been convicted of a felony? And you wouldn't be surprised to learn that all of the felons checked the no box. And consequently, Florida, like many other states, ended up licensing convicted narcotics traffickers to become pharmaceutical wholesalers because they had realized they could make as much money, and they faced a lot lower risk in criminal penalties if they were caught. And so these were the people that were moving into the supply chain to become pharmaceutical wholesalers. After my book came out, Florida, like many other states, completely revamped the laws that govern wholesalers, making it much harder to become one, 70-page application form, $100,000 security bond, mandated criminal background checks. The problem right now is that while many states have much tougher laws, other states do not. So the result is that the really bad guys moved to other states and got out-of-state wholesale licenses. And you still have these drugs coming into our supply chain. So imagine if you had an airport security system where in Chicago you had to go through a magnetometer, and they checked you and made sure you didn't have a gun, you didn't have a bomb, you had to take off your shoes. But in Boston, those were the airports where you could walk on carrying a bomb, carrying guns, right? Those would be effectively your on-ramps for terrorists into to get into our skies. It's the same thing with pharmaceuticals right now. You have states with lax laws that are the on-ramps for all of these diverted drugs.
You know, you talked about how you first got into writing about this. I think you said it was back in 2002. Mm-hmm. And so that's a while back. And at the time you said that when you got into it, you were surprised yourself because you had that expectation. I think everybody has that you go down to the pharmacy, you get your prescription filled. It is what it is. It's been properly handled, and it'll do what it's supposed to. I think that's what everybody expects. And now you've been writing about this all these years now, and as recently as a few months ago, I had this magazine piece. Do you think that this is something that is actually now getting the attention that it deserves, or even much more attention than it did when you started?
Well, it is. It really is at this point finally getting some serious attention. The issue is really in front of a number of congressional committees right now, thank God. So, you know, there is a possibility that there will be federal legislation this year that can really, really protect us much better. But that's the issue. You need federal legislation, because if you do it state by state, what you wind up with is a patchwork of regulation that really is not going to protect us.
The problem here, we talked about the problem being something that you could encounter at your neighborhood pharmacy or wherever it is that you get medications. And certainly there has been, though, some concern about people ordering things over the Internet because they can get better deals. And, you know, as we all know, prescription medicines are very expensive. And if you can try to save some money, a lot of people will do that. It does. Does this become more of a problem if the retailer that you're dealing with is a long way away from you, maybe even in another country?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that that is really an unfortunate situation. Very, very dangerous. I mean, I think the whole mail order phenomenon is quite difficult. First of all, I think that patients need direct access to pharmacists, because, I mean, they are the eyes and ears for patients. So what do you do if you're with a mail order pharmacy, you think you've gotten counterfeit medicine, and you basically all you can do is send an email into this sort of invisible bureaucracy? I think that that is very much to the detriment of patients. And I think to the extent possible, you know, it's better for patients, at least from an oversight point of view, to be getting medication from their brick-and-mortar pharmacies, as we say.
Our guest in this hour of Focus is Catherine Eben. She's an investigative journalist, and we are talking about some of what you'll find in her book, Dangerous Doses, How Counterfeiters Are Contaminating America's Drug Supply. We'll talk some more after a short break. This is Focus.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Craft League of Champaign-Urbana, presenting their 29th annual Arts and Craft Show on November 12th and 13th at the Urbana Civic Center. Open Saturday 10 to 5 and Sunday 11 to 4. More information is available at 367-9546.
This is Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here each week with 10 different topics. In the second hour today, Celeste Quinn is hosting the show, and we'll have our monthly show on companion animal care. Really, what we're talking about here is dog care and behavior. Two guests, dog trainers Jim Keel and Carol Lindholm, will be with Celeste, and they're on the program every month. It's always on a Friday, and it's always a lot of fun when they're on the program. So that's the second hour today. Monday, in the first hour, the 10 o'clock hour, the guest is Louisa Dantas. She's a documentary filmmaker, and we'll be talking about a film that she's made that's titled Land of Opportunity, which is about the effort to rebuild New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. And then also Monday in the 11 o'clock hour, the guest is Andrew Feinstein. He is a former member of the South African Parliament, is also a writer, and we will be talking about a book that he's authored that's titled The Shadow World, and it is about the global arms trade. We are here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics each week. You can look at the schedule by going to our website. You can also listen to programs that you might have missed first time around. That's WILL.illinois.edu. In this hour of Focus, our guest is Catherine Eben. She's an award-winning investigative reporter. Her work has appeared in a number of national magazines, including Fortune, Self, and Vanity Fair. She's also been featured on programs like 60 Minutes and 2020 and Nightline and on National Public Radio. Her book is Dangerous Doses, How Counterfeiters Are Contaminating America's Drug Supply. So if you'd like to read up on this issue, that's the book to look for. And if you'd like to call with questions, comments, what have you, 333-9455 here for Champaign-Urbana. We also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us. That's 800-222-9455. It's also possible to send in a question by email if you would like to do that. And that is will-talk@illinois.edu. And just I think maybe we've touched on these things. I'm looking at an email that came in a little bit ago, asking again, talking about how widespread this is, how often does it happen, what percentage of drugs does this affect. And there again, the person who was listening here did have a question about people who buy their medications from Canada, and whether this would be a problem that you would might be concerned about there in that case. So maybe the question is, well, you know, we talked about this one really dramatic case, for just as an example, where $75 million of stuff was stolen, and now the thought is law enforcement, you said, do you think they know where it is? It's sitting in some warehouse someplace. But, you know, the drug, every day, I have no idea how many prescriptions are filled, but it's an awful lot. So what percentage of all of the drugs that are dispensed every day or every year do you think this affects?
Well, that is a great question, and for a lot of reasons, accurate numbers are hard to come by. But, you know, once you get a sense of the scale of the problem, it's really quite big. So, for example, the FDA put out a report which said that less than 1% of our drug supply is counterfeit. Well, that sounds like good news until you actually do the math and you realize that that number gets you to about 200 plus million prescriptions a year. Okay? So when you hear that the FDA is doing a single counterfeiting investigation, that doesn't sound too big until you realize that one of those investigations, like, for example, counterfeit Lipitor, could involve, in which it did, millions of pills. And Pfizer itself estimated that possibly 6 million Americans got counterfeit Lipitor. So, you know, the numbers in any single quote-unquote case can be really huge. In the counterfeit Epogen incident I had spoken about, the counterfeiter there had counterfeited 110,000 vials of Epogen. Once the feds realized what was going on and they went in to try to recover all these vials, they only recovered 13,000 vials. So it's estimated 97,000 or some such ended up reaching patients. So that's enough to treat something like 30,000 cancer patients for a month. You know, and none of this is geographically specific because we have a national drug supply. So any drug that's in Florida in the morning could be in Texas or California by the end of the day. And that's just how it works nationally. So really, you know, the situation is quite widespread.
Yeah. Well, that again, that points to one of the real difficulties here. I suppose it's the same kind of difficulty that sometimes you come across if you're trying to track infectious disease or foodborne illness or anything like that, where pathogens can move around very quickly. Here, in
right.
a case where we have medications that are moving around very quickly.
Absolutely.
And so you have, you know, you maybe have a case in one part of the country, and maybe you have some cases in another part of the country, and another part of the country, and those people are dealing with their local pharmacists and their local doctors. But, you know, the problem is, how do you assemble all of that data, get it all together in one place, and then be able to draw some conclusions about something larger going on because you're in a position to see it at that level rather than just seeing it as an individual or maybe a few individual cases in a particular place.
Right, right. You know, and people tend to relax if they hear, well, you know, boy, Florida has a really messed up system for regulating its wholesalers, and people say, well, I don't live in Florida. I live in Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, all those drugs are getting to you just as much as if you lived in Florida.
You told the story of this Connecticut theft from the Lilly warehouse, and the issue was here was a facility that was very poorly, there was really not much in the way of security. This happened over a holiday weekend. There were no guards there, and that the people who broke in pretty much had the run of the place to the
right.
extent, even as you said, the extent was at one point they got hungry and ordered pizza as they were loading $75 million worth of drugs into the trucks. So that raises the question, well, how much of this could be, how much of the problem could be addressed by having the manufacturers have an appropriate level of security for the storage facilities where they have the medicines?
Well, I mean, there is absolutely no question that manufacturers have to majorly ramp up security. And if they did, that would at least solve the problem of the stolen drugs. You know, unfortunately, that's only one way that drugs get diverted. There are many, many other ways that drugs get diverted, but certainly being stolen from warehouses is one of them. So I think, you know, previously manufacturers were really caught flat-footed, but they now understand that, yes, there are roving criminal gangs that are casing drug warehouses around this country. And, you know, these criminal gangs are not necessarily doing speculative theft. They're actually going out with shopping lists because they have buyers lined up for these drugs before they even steal them. Mm. It's an amazing system.
Well, that I suppose then again, if you ask the question, how do you really get at the problem? Another issue would be here the penalties for someone who is found guilty of doing this kind of thing. And that people have argued that the penalties here should be much more serious because the consequences are more serious. That is, you could be talking about somebody dying as a result, and that it shouldn't be like stealing a truckload of cigarettes, that the penalties should be much more severe. But in fact, it's pretty much about the same as stealing a truckload of cigarettes.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the penalties in most cases are relatively minimal when you think that you're not just talking about theft, but you could be talking about murder. Mm-hmm. So there was actually a group of six pharmaceutical companies that have gotten together, and they petitioned for a change in the laws to make much stiffer penalties. And that's really one of the issues on the table, is to greatly ratchet up the penalties for stealing or diverting, adulterating, or counterfeiting drugs.
I think that we have a caller here ready to go. And again, I'd like to make sure that people know we have about 10 minutes or so in this part of the show, talking with investigative journalist Catherine Eben. We're happy to take questions from people who are listening. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, toll free 800-222-9455. And here's a caller in Sullivan, and this would be on our toll free line, line 4. Hello.
Yes.
Hi there.
A few years back, I read an article that said the average drug was traded something like 7 times before it ever made it to the consumer, you know, through wholesalers and whatever. If they could eliminate that, you know, like, shall we say, from the manufacturer, one wholesaler, to the pharmacist, that would eliminate a lot of problems.
I totally agree with your point. I mean, there are a lot of wholesalers in the supply chain who do not actually, in my opinion, serve any particular function. They are enriching themselves by engaging in what we call parallel trade. They're buying from one wholesaler and they're selling to another. And basically, they're profiting from the arbitrage, which is that they're buying cheap and selling higher. But, you know, I would contend, as your caller is suggesting, that, you know, there's no real benefit. There's no value added to that activity. I'm sorry.
What? Oh, yeah. Perhaps the caller was just simply agreeing with you or appreciated the fact that you're agreeing with the point. So you were saying that you could make the argument that really doesn't, aside from for the individual businesses that are making money there, that as far as consumers are concerned, that there's no benefit to them to have all of this passing back and forth of medications in the middle before it gets to the point where they get it.
Absolutely. You know, so, I mean, obviously, the wholesalers would argue that they add value. I don't see that they do. I think they're making profits. But, you know, there is no drug whose efficacy and safety is improved by passing through a dozen hands. Hmm. So I think that is, you know, this whole secondary wholesale market. You know, people have made the argument, and I wouldn't disagree, that it shouldn't even exist.
Is it really the case that there could be that a drug could pass through as many as 7 different hands, a set of hands between the manufacturer and the end point of sale?
Absolutely. It happens all the time. And in fact, the Epogen that was counterfeit and I tracked it through the supply chain moved through about a dozen hands.
So the
dangers that that drug is exposed to are significant.
Yeah. Let's talk with another caller here, someone in Robinson. This is line number one.
I tuned in late, so you may have already discussed this, but I was giving my cat some medicine the other day, and I looked at the box, and it said made in India, and I was just livid, you know.
Yep.
So I thought, how do we know? I mean, I guess you just have to ask every time you go to the pharmacy, or when you mail order from, say, Merck, you don't have anything like a box or anything. You just see where it was manufactured.
Absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, you're really putting your finger on a major problem, which is that consumers are getting further and further separated from the origin of their drugs.
Yes.
And it's very troubling. And, you know, a lot of my investigation has been around this question. So, for example, I mean, I will just give you one example. I get a maintenance drug, and because my insurance doesn't cover the brand name, I'm automatically switched to a generic, and in fact, nobody even carries the brand name of this drug anymore. Well, the generic, where is that from? I go to the pharmacy, I say, who makes this generic? Well, they hold out a big bottle for me, which says the distributor. But I say to them, but that's not the manufacturer, that's the distributor. I actually have to go home and do my own research to find the distribution agreement so I can figure out who made it. You know, and I am, as you can imagine, a vigilant consumer when it comes to my drugs.
Yes.
But you know, you're absolutely right to study labels, to ask questions, and, you know, not for nothing, you know, don't give your cat or dog veterinary medicine made in China or India. It's, I wouldn't.
Well, you know, it still costs like $23, and I know this penicillin is so cheap, you know,
right.
for people, it's that I thought, well, I bet they paid a dollar for it, you know, something
right.
like that. I was just furious. But thanks a lot.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Well, that brings up an interesting question. I know, having looked at this a little bit, this is on a different subject, but, you know, the subject of a point of origin labeling for food products can be
yeah.
quite controversial. People think that everything we eat, it also ought to say on there where it's from. And there has been some resistance to that idea in Washington. Here we have something with consequences that are even more dramatic. So you could make the argument that, well, if anything, that ought to be required to be on the package of pharmaceutical. Is anybody in Washington saying yes, in fact, that that's something that should be?
You know, it's interesting because I think in this whole debate, we have not yet gotten to the point where you could have a consumer bill of rights, which is basically what you're talking about. You know, but I would definitely propose that. So I would say, hey, you know, if CVS wants to sell Epogen, that in the case of my book, Dangerous Doses, I documented, moved through a dozen hands, was in a beer cooler in the back of a strip club in Florida. I'm not kidding you. Great. Why don't they put out a sign? Why don't they pass along the discount to the consumer and put a sign up in the front saying special of the day? You know, Epogen that was in the back of a beer cooler in a strip club moved through a dozen hands, but hey, we'll pass on the discount to you. Would anybody take that medicine? No way.
Well, that gets at something we actually haven't touched on, but something that I think that is really important, and that is that the people point to the fact that we don't have a good system for tracking the medications from the producer to the end point of sale to get actually to know where it's been. And that in fact we may have some information about lot numbers, but that doesn't mean that you can tell where every pill has been or every vial of medicine has been. Is it actually possible let's set aside how difficult that would be and how expensive that would be. Would it actually be possible to do that?
You know, yes, it would be. It absolutely would be. And, you know, the science is there. I mean, we have talked about track and trace, which is basically RFID, you know, barcoding. You can, the technology is there to basically barcode down to the individual pill. And it's been there for some time, and that's what we need, so that you would have an automatic electronic audit trail down to the pill level. And probably not surprising, there's been a lot of resistance from inside of the industry, from the National Association of Chain Drug Stores and other corporate interests that want an opaque drug supply. They don't want it. They don't want information out there on where the drugs have come from, because they make money buying discounted drugs.
Well, and that was, and I suppose here also that people do will complain, or the argument that they will make is, well, that will add cost to what is already a costly thing. People are already paying a lot of money for their medicines, and I'm sure that there will be people who would be prepared to make the argument says, well, if you require this, the drugs are even going to cost more. Has anyone actually done a kind of an estimate of what it actually would cost were we to implement such a system?
You know, there have been estimates, and some of them say, okay, maybe a penny a pill. But frankly, would it add cost? Maybe a little bit. But it's not like consumers are seeing the benefit of the discounts that these pharmacy chains are getting. Mm-hmm. Nobody's giving us a discount for these inferior or dangerous drugs, you know? So maybe if you just close the gap between the discount and the regular price, we wouldn't have to see a price increase.
A couple of minutes left here. We have a caller locally here where we are in Champaign, so we'll go to them. This is line one, number one. Hello.
Hi. Hello. I just got a refill on some medication that I've been taking for years. And that was just 2 days ago. And when I took it yesterday, I thought it looked different. It was thinner and a smaller diameter, and that kind of concerned me, but then I took it again today because I haven't checked into it, but I've heard that you can plug a number in that's on the pill and on the internet, and it would tell you what it is, although I did check the bottle, and it says it's what it's supposed to be, but is that a reliable source?
Well, you know, I don't know of any central place that you can plug in a number. I think it depends on what the pill is and who the manufacturer is, and whether they would verify the authenticity of the drug for you. But, you know, another question to ask yourself is, I mean, is it a generic or are you getting a brand name?
It only comes in brand name.
Okay, so, you know, sometimes for security reasons even, manufacturers will change the appearance of their drugs. So one thing that you can certainly do is to either, I mean, most reputable brand name drug companies will have 1-800 numbers where you can call in and make an inquiry like that.
Okay.
Or which certainly you could ask the go back to the pharmacy where you got it filled and just say to them, hey, do you know, have they changed the appearance of the pill from what it was before, because this to me it looks different from what I had been taking before.
Okay.
Right,
and I take it every day for years now.
Right, I mean, see, that's a good thing that you noticed that, you paid attention to that, is a very good thing. And given what's going on in the supply chain, pharmacists or drug companies that don't pay attention to that, I mean, that would be ridiculous. So definitely, you're well within your right to inquire.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, thank you. We're down to the point where we have about a minute or so left. I guess I just want to come back to the issue of just how big a problem this is, or in terms of its impact on individuals, and whether, you know, how many documented cases, have there been a number of documented cases where someone was seriously harmed as a result?
Right. I mean, at this point, I would say, I mean, there are thousands of people in this country who have walked into pharmacies and have gotten counterfeit drugs that have harmed them. I don't think we have exact numbers on it, but, you know, the phenomenon is definitely widespread at this point. And people who say it isn't don't really know what they're talking about. Now, you know, we're not up to the levels that we've seen in other countries, which is, you know, in some countries, people estimate that 40 to 50% of the drug supply is counterfeit. And thank God we're certainly not there. But there's no question that it is a widespread phenomenon.
Yeah, I think that that's interesting. I've just have recently seen some reporting about Interpol embracing this drug counterfeiting as a serious issue because, as you say, in places outside of the United States, it can be an even bigger problem than we see here.
Right.
Well, there we're going to have to leave it because we've come to the end of the time. But again, for people who'd like to read more on the subject, I certainly would suggest they look at the book by our guest, Catherine Eben. The title of the book is Dangerous Doses, How Counterfeiters Are Contaminating America's Drug Supply. Who's the publisher now, Catherine?
Yeah, one point about that is I would recommend that they actually get the paperback, which is the most updated version, which is has a different subtitle. It's Dangerous Doses, A True Story of Cops, Counterfeiters, and the Contamination of America's Drug Supply.
Ah, okay.
They could get it online at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com, or they can get links through my website, which is KatherineEban.com.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for talking with us. We appreciate it.